Work and worship, helping, I can't do this. This is recording. Work and worship, help finding fulfillment and meaning Monday to Sunday from the book of Isaiah. That's what we're talking about today. I'm going to list off a few things right off the bat if you want to write these down. These are the points that we'll discuss and cover in our message here. The gift of work. The dangers of work. The offering of work as worship, and work or worship at work. Worship at work. We're going to discuss all four of those things. Work is a subject that dominates all of our lives, in whatever degree and whatever capacity. All of us are involved in different things. You could be the work of a student. You're in the the journey of education, and you're doing homework and studies, and you're living the intellectual life, and you're broadening your mind. You're involved in that. You could be at home raising and educating children and helping them learn to be good, significant, meaningful human beings. You could be in some kind of job. Whatever that wide spectrum is, you might be retired and you're putting your energies towards specific things that you're passionate about and now have more freedom to focus on. All of us are engaged in work. It could be work in schools, offices, hospitals, gas stations, convenience stores, churches, daycare centers. It doesn't matter what it is, we're all involved in some form of labor. Some of it's more manual, some of it's more intellectual, some of it's more interpersonal, some of it's in high academics, and some of it's just in making life happen so people can do all the other stuff. We need it all, right? I don't know if you're familiar with the book of Ecclesiasticus, which is a book out of particularly Eastern Orthodox, Catholic backgrounds. They have a few other books that they consider part of their canon. The way most Protestants look at it is these are books that were read a lot by the early church too, or before. There's a passage in the book of Ecclesiasticus, before we get to Isaiah, that I want to read. It's kind of an apologetic or a defense for a priest or a pastor. So in the story, the guy's basically like trying to set it up that he has meaning too, because he doesn't do a lot of work, but his work is like brain work and heart work, and it's kind of a funny piece. But at the beginning, he kind of describes everybody else, and I find it a meaningful part of this discussion. He says in Ecclesiasticus 38, verse 25, he says, "How can a man," and a lot of this language, man, woman, we all know we're redeemed in the new covenant. We're all co-heirs with Christ. We're all, whether it's her or him, there's a lot of hers that are working a lot different and sometimes more harder than him. And sometimes him is working a lot harder than her in some areas. But we're all working, right? So let's put that off the table and not get hung up by that language, whatever culture comes from. How can a man become wise who guides the plow? Now, how can you be a person of wisdom when you're like out in the field pushing a plow, just crashing into the dirt and breaking up ground? How can you be a wise person, you know? Where's the wisdom in labor and manual work, this kind of idea? How can a man become wise who guides the plow? Whose pride is in wielding the goad? Who is absorbed in the task of driving oxen and talks only about cattle? He concentrates on plowing his furrows and works late to give the heifers their fodder. So it is with every craftsman or designer who works by night as well as by day, such as those who make engravings on signets and patiently vary their design. They concentrate on making exact representation and sit up late to finish their task. So it is with the smith, sitting by the anvil intent on his ironwork. The smoke of the fire shrivels his flesh. He wrestles in the heat of the furnace. The hammer rings again and again in his ears, and his eyes are on the pattern he's copying. He concentrates on completing his task and stays up late to give it a perfect finish.
So it is with the potter sitting at his work, turning the wheel with his feet, always engrossed in the task of making up his tally. He molds the clay with his arms, crouching forward and applying his strength. He concentrates on finishing the glazing and stays awake to clean out the furnace. All these rely on their hands, and each is skillful at his own craft. Without them, a city would have no inhabitants, no settlers or travelers would ever come to it. They maintain the fabric of this world. And their prayers, or their daily work, I like this version better, their daily work is their prayer. Do you see your daily work as a prayer? I think we all are, if we're honest, it's one of the challenges in our day-to-day lives is finding meaning and fulfillment in the mundane and in the ordinary. We often are bred on superhero stories and change the world scenarios and be the best that you can be. And then when real life comes into play, you realize that most of life is full of minutes that seem hard to connect to that narrative. How does this translate to that kind of I'm going to change the world scenario that young people are often fed to try to cause them to be greater than they're living? We live in kind of a sports-fascinated culture that pushes the idea of victory and success and improvement and winning. And we translate those narratives down into our day-to-day lives that come down to places where we're kind of bred with this idea that it's up to me to fix everything or to fix something or to be better than somebody. And then what happens is when you're involved in lots of things that don't seem to fit into that narrative, you start finding despair, start finding disillusionment, possibly anger, frustration, irritation, and something starts happening in you that you start feeling like, this can't be all life's about. And then people go into the mode where they start changing all kinds of components. Well, maybe I need to change my job. I need to change where I live. I need to change what I look like. I need to change my hair. I need to change my body. I need to change relationships. I need to change my boss. I need to change. There's something out there that must be the key that if I just change that one thing, click, it'll all go in the direction I've always known it's supposed to. If you live in that hamster wheel, you can struggle with a big chunk of your life just feeling like, I just got to get past this to get to that. God's word through Isaiah that we mentioned at the beginning of the series on Isaiah last week was, first and foremost, our lives should be influenced and shaped by authentic worship with God. That he's not interested in all the outward show of religiosity and all the structures of religion if your heart is disconnected from that. He wants all of that outward practice to be united and brought whole to a heart that is authentic and real. He doesn't want lip service. He wants it coming from the heart. Now, if your life is shaped by that perspective of worship, you realize that then wherever you go into whatever sphere you're in, you realize that those two realities are also true for that area. In your relationships, your words and your heart, your hands and your heart should be one. You shouldn't be saying one thing and doing another. You shouldn't be doing one thing and inwardly feeling another. The goal is to find harmony and wholeness so our heart and our hands and our head are all saying the same thing to the best of our ability. If you get in work and you're doing a job, but in your heart you hate the boss, you hate the company, you hate what you do, and you're telling yourself that you're good for that company? Would you say that in a relationship? I'm in the relationship, but in my mind and in my heart, I hate. I don't like you. I don't want to be with you. I don't want to do anything with you, but I'm committed. How many people are in churches? They don't like the vision of the church. They don't particularly like the leadership. They don't really care about anything other than they're just there for Jesus. Find a place. Life's too short to be so unhappy and deal so much energy on wasted things. Get somewhere where you have more of alignment with what's going on. If you're in a job that you loathe, that's a symptom that something needs to change, either within you or possibly externally. Isaiah works to show us that in our relationship with God, what we do in life is powerfully shaped and affected by what's going on inside of us. A good chunk of Isaiah deals with the nation of Israel and Judah, God's people, and their wrestlings with other nations, and the struggle to trust God and his provision and protection, or turn to man or other kingdoms to protect them or provide for them. This challenge goes on. So you see kind of three things as you're reading through Isaiah. You see a lot of discussions about wealth and poverty. You see a lot of discussions about military might and kings and trusting in God. And you see a lot about, the third one. Went by my memory there, not my note. Oh, about idols. So these three things, money, idols, and power, are predominant narratives through the book of Isaiah, where Isaiah is continually challenging God's people that they are putting their trust and putting their worship in the things they've made with their hands, in the money that they've made from their industry, or in the power of kingdoms to protect them. And this message is played in many different ways throughout the book of Isaiah. It's the core thing that humanity struggles with all the time. Where we get our identity and what we worship. What's important to us, where we put our time. Work should be shaped by worship, who God is and what God expects of us. Work is about order over chaos. Just like God in Genesis, bringing creation out of chaos, work is intended to bring stability, order, and possibilities. Work is about provision for yourself, for the family that you have, and then for others. That would be, you know, the poor, church, whatever outside of that. Work is a means to meaning. A means to meaning. What you do, how you do it, and what you do with your income ties into the meaning that you get out of life. All three of those things are important. How you do your work translates to the level of meaning that you have in your life. If you do stuff half-baked, there's some other words that are better, but half, you know, half-baked, you don't put a lot of energy into it, you're not going to derive a lot of meaning from the product of that work. When you do something with a lot of heart, a lot of mind, a lot of preparation, a lot of yourself into it, when you pour yourself into something, what do you get out of that? You derive a lot of meaning from that expression. These are all integral parts of the way God's designed us and how we live life and are to pursue and to praise. We're supposed to celebrate these endeavors and these things and these values in and among our families and our communities, so that people begin to understand what the purpose of life is. A question that so many people wrestle with and fail to realize, that the purpose of life is often discovered right in the contents and the moments of your life. The purpose of life is to be the person you're supposed to be, that God wants you to be in the moment that you are in, to the best of your ability with his help and the resources he's given you. To bring the best and the good to the moment and the place and the people that are around you. God's given you the opportunity to bring order and stability and opportunity to a world that is so often in so many other people's hands. Disorderly, chaotic, lack of possibilities. And people often not present. Work is a means to be there. The gift of work. Work is not a curse, but a gift from God given to us before the fall. By our work, we employ useful skills to glorify God, love our neighbors, and further God's kingdom. Work is not a result of the fall, as many incorrectly believe, although the fall, because of its curse, made it inevitable that sometimes work is frustrating and difficult, Genesis 3:17 and 19 tells us. There's a lot of sweat connected with work. It's hard because of the fall. And you know that if you work with people. Is it easy? No. There's all kinds of thorns and thistles with personalities and temperaments and goals and ambitions. Work just doesn't flow. It's always hiccupy and full of new unforeseen issues because of people. We can get a better understanding of work assigned by God by studying the work that he did in creation when he brought order out of chaos. A gardener does something similar when he creatively uses the materials at his disposal and rearranges them to produce additional resources for mankind. Thus, Adam's work in the garden can be seen as a metaphor for all work. A gardener is not a park ranger. They don't just leave things in their natural state. Timothy Keller put it this way: work is rearranging the raw materials of a particular domain to draw out its potential for the flourishing of everyone. Say that again. Work is rearranging raw materials. Like if you're in a garden, you take the dirt, you take the seeds, you pull the weeds, you fight off all the pests, you prepare the ground, right? You take all the raw materials and you bring them together to do something that wouldn't happen unless you put your hand and your heart and your head to the work. You rearrange all that raw material for a particular domain. I work primarily in the area of people's hearts and people and ideas and issues of truth and worldviews and wrestling with people about what they think and what they believe, right? I bring and try to bring order to chaos in the world that is saying nothing is true. My domain is in the ideas of heart and belief and ideas and philosophy and theology. That's where I do most of my work with people, right? Trying to bring something of order to that domain that if it wasn't there, there would just be nothing or something destructive or nothing good. I want to grow something in that domain to draw out its potential for the flourishing of everyone. The person who makes these streets good makes everybody happy when they drive on them, right? When the potholes are there and you blow a tire on it, life is not flourishing. We want life to flourish. Work brings that. In our world today, in which our daily work seems disconnected from our weekend worship, God says, no, if you know my law, his word, and you love me, you will not, listen to this, mistreat workers in the workplace. Isaiah knew from his personal experience that a genuine vision of God changes our lives, including how we live as believers where we work. Now, a good chunk of Isaiah is devoted to this idea that you can't be in right relationship with God and then go out to your workers and treat them like garbage and rip them off and drive them hard, or the wonderful phrase the prophets use, grinding the face of the poor. I mean, that's a graphic image that Isaiah uses of people who are claiming Isaiah 1 worship status, yet in their work life are grinding people to produce. Worship or work not emanating from a true vision of who God is and what God has promised is not true worship and it's not true work. Our worship and our work should be informed and shaped by who God is, how he treats us, and how he informs and teaches us to treat others, and how to act as people of character that are like God in places of work and relationship. This disconnect is where so much of the witness of the church falls apart. People go to church on Sunday or Saturday, depending on your brand, and they worship God, and then they worship self Monday through Saturday. And people in the community see this person who says they're a God worshiper. Then they see how you interact in business or in relationships, how you treat people. And it does a discredit to the claim that you're a worshiper of God. It's a challenge. Let's not forget that Jesus was a carpenter for most of his life. Paul was a tent maker all through his ministry as an apostle, various forms. Peter was a professional fisherman. When he tried to run away from God a few times, he tried to go back to work. And then God got him back on to the stuff he wanted to do. All of them were involved in some form or another in the normal, everyday gift of life. Ordinary life. Real life. Day-to-day life. The life where we live most of our moments. The main voices of our faith all were connected to blue-collar life. Not white-collar life. No judgment on either. But they were down where people sweat for getting by kind of life. That's important to know and should shape us. Isaiah's warnings about work not shaped by worship. I just lost. Did I lose something? Dead external religion or lip service religious performance produces a work ethic characterized. So dead religion, lip service religion. I go to Sunday and I worship, then I go to work and I'm somebody else. That kind of life. This is what it looks like. You'll probably recognize this in yourself or others. Probably others first. A work ethic characterized by a lack of concern for one's labor or laborers, workers. A lack of concern for your work or workers around you. It reveals itself in cutting corners, half-hearted output, do the least you have to do, do less but expect more in return, work that's ordered by a clock, not character. Means you do only what you have to do till you have to do it and no more. You never go beyond because, well, some companies don't allow you to. That's a different issue. But for a lot of people, when the heart is at work here and we're struggling with this issue, we're looking to do just as little as we have to. It's visible where employees or subordinates are mere instruments for personal or business development, personal prosperity, prestige, or career advancement. We're using other people to get ahead. This person, the person who is struggling with these areas, their leadership style, if they're above you or around you, it's often full of strife, quarreling, backbiting, short fuses, uncontrolled anger, which at its root really reveals they're working from selfish ambition instead of pursuing justice and righteousness out of love. Justice and righteousness is basically doing what's right for all because you are motivated by love. You want to do what's right and let other people do what's right. When you're not motivated and working from that place, it's about ambition, it's about just getting by, it's about cutting corners, it's about lying on time cards, it's about stealing, it's about not involving yourself, hiding behind your desk, never getting connected with people, just avoiding everything to just do what you need to do to get out of there, to get to whatever else you want to do. Now listen, there's times where there's seasons like that, you know, when you're pushing through the exams and you're just having to cram information or whatever. I'm not saying you're supposed to bring every one of those moments to God in some glorious, ecstatic place of worship. There's stuff that just needs to be done. And sometimes things are hard and it's long and it's tiring. But if you find yourself consistently in this place where work and your witness at work is a weight that drags down your heart of worship towards God and your relationship with other people and your ability to advance or succeed or prosper, it's time for change. Probably a heart change. This is a difficult area. The nation of Judah and Israel was prone to self-reliance and idolatry instead of faithful obedience to God and righteous living. Isaiah focused on three things: God's people's trust in wealth, military might, idolatry. The combination of these three issues constantly draw people away from worship and reliance on God and resulted in unrighteous practices in work, worship, and witness. Wealth. Isaiah said there was no end to the treasures of God's people. He was noticing as he was prophesying that they just had stuff galore. All kinds of treasures. And what happens when you're building treasures and you're constantly accumulating, you have to build bigger barns or bigger houses or bigger garages or more storage units. Then you're constantly looking at how do I protect and maintain and take care of my stuff. And life, if it's just accumulating stuff, people get pushed out by stuff because you spend more and more of your time caring for stuff than caring for people. And stuff's important, but if you have more stuff than you need, you then begin to move into your wife's time, your husband's time, your kid's time, your neighbor's time, or worship of God in some capacity. It's not the evil of stuff, it's the place that stuff can create in our lives that become evil. Where we start serving the needs of equipment or toys over hearts and minds and lives. Where our calendar gets full of care for stuff instead of care for souls or creation or our own bodies. Wealth enables all kinds of freedoms that work is intended to provide. It's supposed to provide your needs. That's why when the New Testament teaches about giving, it always teaches that, you know, God's desire for you is to have enough and then have over enough so that you have enough to give to other people. God wants us to have our needs met so that we can then not just focus on ourselves and our families, but then look for other people who have legitimate need and help. Because there's a lot of people in this world that have got the shortest straw that need a helping hand in some capacity in life. And if your life is fully focused on meeting your own needs, you never get to participate in the joy of helping other people reach their potential and excel and grow. And that produces a life of less meaning. Are you following me? Am I outside of where people are living? Are we on the same page? This isn't about guilt. This isn't about condemnation. This is about figuring out how you're working out wrong to get better results. Think of it that way. You know, get some of this stuff aligned. You might feel better. Change something you're eating and you realize you don't have gas all the time. That's a good thing, right? This stuff produces indigestion in our souls. If we can get some of this stuff ordered or realigned, we start seeing greater fulfillment and greater joy and greater sense of meaning and blessing will result out of this. Idols. Isaiah said, the land is full of idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their fingers have made. Now, this is very true in some cultures. I spent this week talking to my brother who lives in Thailand, where in Buddhism, in the Buddhism of the East, not the Western Buddhism, idolatry and worship of idols and sacrifices and offerings and all kinds of superstition is deeply connected to making sure you have idols everywhere on your property and your work. You produce and give sacrifices to them. There's all kinds of stuff in that in Buddhism that and animism that produce a life that revolves around the idol. And your blessing is deeply connected to whether that idol gets something every day. Isaiah just sermon after sermon that just goes for the root of that. And so I was engaging my brother on like, how do you read this stuff in a culture that does that? I mean, it just sounds offensive. It must be difficult. And we're doing that. So in our culture, we have to figure out what are the idols. Let me just give you a few things that might help you identify whatever an idol might be besides the show. An idol is anything we place first instead of God. Every good Christian person's heard that in church, right?
An idol is what I put before God, whatever that means.
Let's try to narrow it down. What do you trust more, value more, want more of, spend time with, serve more, speak about, think about more, give your time to? What altar to this thing do you go to for joy, for meaning, for validation, or for safety? When you look at those questions, you can start identifying, where's my idolatry? What am I worshiping to find meaning and value? What am I going to tell me I'm okay, or I'll be better, or I'll prosper? We are all people that go to things that we make with our hands for that. We're prone to idolatry. We turn to the stuff we can see and that we can handle and that we can control to find meaning. It's difficult for us to turn to the Lord whom we can't see and trust Him and have faith in Him that He will take care of us and He'll provide for us. So we supplant Him and pick something else like the Israelites and find a calf that we can make and say, here's God, we'll worship this. Some of us do it with, there's so much ground, landmines, if I even go into this discussion. But Isaiah said wealth, military power, and idolatry are the three areas that drive us away from God. If we think that leaders will save us, we have displaced issues of worship. Are leaders important? Do we want good leaders? Do we need leaders? Are they God's ordained authority? Absolutely. But if you place your trust in human strength, power, wealth, military might, you are falling into the same categories that Isaiah comes against chapter after chapter. We have to reorder our hearts to put our faith in the protection and provision and peace of God. We rely on the protection of our spouses or police or other elements in our lives that bring safety, but ultimately we have to know that people will let us down. And if you build a world of ideology and idealism around people, and then people fail you and your whole world comes crumbling down and you live a life of disillusionment because your leader didn't give you the hope and change you wanted, or this leader falls in sexual sin, or that pastor runs away with the secretary, or this person embezzles money, or that person who is part of the kids or nonprofit world is molesting children, all those kind of things happen in the world, and you realize that humanity is infected with sin and has fallen short of the glory of God. And whenever I put my trust and my hope and my sense of validation and all my joy and make every one of my needs in a human being, it's a recipe for coming up short. No respect, no judgment on the good or the gift of whoever. That is too much to ask of a human. You can only ask those questions of God. Or have those expectations of God. He's the only one that will meet and go beyond those expectations. And once you're driving your sense of self and meaning from God, then your relationship with other people and the fact that people fail, it's balanced. Because your tank isn't so empty and you're demanding them to fill it all the time. If your body is your sense of meaning, your value to other people, age and you have a meeting coming. And it ain't going to be a good experience. Because you'll find out that you can try as much to work on it with your hands, but the ground is calling thee. I've already covered this, so I'll just briefly say one verse out of Isaiah 5:8 on forgetting the poor. The other theme that Isaiah resounds against. Because why? When you're involved in power and money and wealth and yourself, you forget about other people. That's pretty typical. But there's a great verse out of Isaiah that really is kind of like grinding the vice of the poor. He says this, "What sorrow for you who buy up house after house, field after field, until everyone's evicted and you live alone in the land." Ooh, I was kind of open for that piece. I don't want anybody. Isaiah says that when people in power buy up all the land and push everybody away, it actually is a prison. You're actually not living in the fullness of how God desires humanity to live, which isn't alone. The very first declaration of humanity out of Genesis is, it is not good for humans to be alone. You need silence, you need retreat, you need reprieve. But as a posture of life, if you find yourself preferring to be away from people, that's reflective of something that's gone on that needs healed and needs to be brought into wholeness.
God's designed us for community. Not dependence, not independence, but interdependence, which is healthy. Galatians 6:4 says, pay careful attention to your own work. Then you'll get the satisfaction of a job well done, and you won't need to compare yourself with anybody else. Ephesians 4 says, anyone who has been stealing, don't steal anymore. Work. Do something useful with your hands that you'll have something to share with those in need. Colossians 3:23 and 24 says, whatever you do, it's not really the issue. Work heartily, or put all your heart into your work. Bring your heart to your work as unto the Lord, not to men, knowing that the Lord, from the Lord you will receive an inheritance for your reward. You're actually serving Christ. So Paul says there, whatever you're doing, do it like you're working for Jesus. If you're working overtime, you're not working for your overtime, just your paycheck, you're also serving the Lord. Whatever you're making, whatever you're instructing, look at it as a gift to the Lord to bring order, stability, and prosperity to the world. It's a gift. Last thing I just want to touch on before we close is worship at work. And this really could be a whole series, and I'll just touch it lightly. I'm not talking about skipping out of your duties so you can put in the worship tape in your car and just get some Jesus in between whatever. I'm talking about approaching this reality that as Christians, we are in union with the Lord through His Spirit. There is no longer a tabernacle or a temple. The Holy of Holies of God is in the church, His temple, and in our spirit. Wherever you go, the temple of God, the presence of God, goes with you. Therefore, whatever you're doing throughout your day, you can commune with God in your spirit, even at work. It's kind of used like the imagery of dreaming, where you're asleep, but your heart is what? Awake. There's two realities happening. You're doing something here, but another reality is going on here at the same time. Christian spirituality is about cultivating a walk with the Lord Jesus through His Word and Spirit, where we learn to walk in the Spirit. We learn to work and do our work in the Spirit. We learn that our communion with God isn't about a place or a time on the clock or a place in Spokane. It's every day I walk in communion with God. I can know Him, hear His voice, commune with Him, and deepen that communion with God to the point where even the work I'm doing becomes an expression or becomes an outflow of my worship. It's kind of like this. If I lit incense in your office while you worked, you would be working at the same time as the incense is also burning. Christian spirituality is about living a life of incense and communion with the Lord that begins to be a fragrance in our lives, where we learn to worship, we learn to hear Him, we learn to yield to His voice, we learn to bring that worship to whatever we do. We become people who are in the Spirit. We're not outside of it, not waiting to get to it, we're not calling it down. We live in communion with God. That shouldn't end our ability to draw sustenance and vitality and strength and grace from Him, because we are united with Him. Therefore, you can actually be involved in the most mundane of tasks, be it whatever you think is the most mundane, and actually begin to experience the reality of worship even in that. One of the greatest examples of that is the writings of Brother Lawrence, who was a Catholic dude who was locked away in the prison, in the kitchen most of the time, having to wash pots and pans. And he wrote a book about how he learned to commune with God doing dishes, which should be a required reading for everybody. He said this, I find it funny, he had a little phrase, Lord of all pots and pans and things. Because you know there's things when you're doing dishes. Lots of gross things, if you're me. Lord of pots and pans and things, make me a saint by getting meals and washing up plates. Do you see how he crafted prayer? He crafted spirituality. He crafted being more like God out of the work that he was doing. He was talking to the Lord as he's
working in pots and pans and things. He's saying, God, shape me and make me by this work I'm involved in. I see that you're doing something in me. Clean up this plate. Clean up my heart. Wash away the stuff that's in my life. Send someone into my life to scrub off this stuff. Make me a bountiful plate full of goodness for people. You turn your life into acts of prayer and acts of worship. And the Lord doesn't just leave you at the office door and show up when you get in your car. He walks with you through your life in whatever capacity. If you're a doctor, if you're someone in medical, or you're in education, you are bringing the instruction, the counsel, the care, the comfort, the helper of the Spirit to whatever you are involved in. Staying deaf, feeding people who are hungry, educating the mind, all the works of Jesus. Jesus fed the poor, Jesus taught the masses. Jesus healed the sick. You can be involved in all of that activity through either the money that you give or the work that you do. You are involved in bringing order to chaos in people's lives, bringing light into darkness due to your work. And it should be an act of worship. It's an opportunity for an act of worship. And you know what? I'll give you this one little snippet from Lawrence, because sometimes some special things happen when you pursue work like this. And he reveals his cards one time. He says, I've quit all forms of devotion and set prayers, which is a lot for a Catholic to say. But those to which my state obliged me, I make it my business only to preserve, to persevere in his holy presence. Wherein, this is what he means. He says, I keep myself by a simple attention and a general fond regard to God, which I may call an actual presence of God. So in other words, he says, I recollect myself and I remind myself and I remember that I'm in his presence. He's with me. He's here. That is truth. That is reality. I am in your presence, God. You are here with me. That's what he's saying. He's recollecting himself. He's reminding himself of that. He's learning to walk throughout the day saying, I'm with God. God's with me. I'm in union with him. Then he says this. Whether I speak better, which I call the actual presence of God, or to speak better, a habitual, silent, secret conversations of my soul with God, which, listen to this, which often causes me joys and raptures inwardly, and sometimes so outwardly, so great, that I'm forced to use means to moderate them and prevent their appearance to others. Which means, he says, there are moments throughout my day when I'm at the dishes and I get lost in the presence of the Lord and I'm overcome and I have to recollect myself so other people don't think I'm losing it. That look, all he's saying is Revelation 3:20. Behold, I stand at the door and I'm knocking. If you will open the door, I will come into you and we will dine. So I ask you as we close, are you feasting at work? Are you worshiping at work? Are you caught in the dangers of work? Do you understand what work is for? These are all parts of your life as a Christian where God can be found. And I pray that we all would honor God in whatever work we're involved in. Amen?
Amen.
Let's stand.